Whether you're just delving into the world of voiceover,
you're an established voice actor,
or you just want to listen to some unfiltered thoughts and opinions about the industry,
then this podcast is for you.
I'm Michael.
And I'm Jen. And this is the Off-Air Podcast.
Hello.
Good morning.
Welcome to another episode of the Off-Air Voiceover Podcast. Some of you may have noticed cheeky little change to the name. I was like, fuck it, Jen, let's just Mandela effect everyone and pretend like we're in a bar. It was always like that. But no, we had to change it because we knew from the beginning that the name voiceover was obviously a key relevance to the podcast. However, it was just too long. But it came down to just simple SEO tactics, so we just updated it.
We are absolutely learning as we go, and apparently you need the topic to be in the title, so there we go.
Absolutely. So, and speaking of learning, it gives immense pleasure to invite the one and only Mr. Scott Tunnix on for a conversation with us today. Thank you very much for coming today, Scott.
Yeah, no worries at all. Thank you very much for having me.
So excited to hear.
I was just as surprised to hear the name change then. I thought I'd come to the wrong podcast.
Do you know, well, I could say the Mandela effect. Do you know what the Mandela effect is?
No.
Have you heard of that? You not know?
No.
Oh, right, I'll give context. Right, so the Mandela effect is this phenomena where a mass group of people all believe a memory that apparently didn't exist. So it started out with Nelson Mandela. A lot of people believed that he died in prison, but he didn't. But one of the most popular ones, you know the Monopoly guy?
Yeah.
Was this about the monocle? Did he have a monocle?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Do you ever remember him wearing a monocle?
I think everyone does, and he actually doesn't,
never,
or is the
ever,
other way around?
Never, ever had one. So that's the Mandela effect.
That is so weird.
So we changed our logo to the voiceover podcast. And I was like, well, just Mandela effect everyone. Pretend it was always like that.
Yeah.
you've kind of blown that now because it was the discussion. But
well, you've got
you can't gaslight people, though, can we? I reckon
I'm joking. Yeah. Oh, you can't. Anyway, all the old posts are out there with the old one on. So
although I was changing something and I was like, yeah, that has become... I'm glad we've addressed it now anyway.
So are you updating your artwork then? Because I love the artwork, by the way.
It's done.
It's done.
Fantastic.
It just slipped it in there.
Oh, nice.
But thank you.
Jen takes full credit for all of that.
she shouldn't, but she does. No, I'm joking.
No. I might be biased, but I think you've done an absolute cracking job.
Appreciate
it. I think it's awesome. Yeah, it's very standout. It's very cool.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. But obviously you have taken the time out to come and sort of just shoot the shit with us a little bit today, Scott. So for those of you who may not know a little about yourself and your sort of career journey, do you want to just give like a bit of an introduction just to cover that?
Yeah, sure. So I started dabbling in the world of voiceover back in 2018, just towards the end of the year, and just completely fell in love with it. I don't come from an acting background or anything like that. I worked for 10 years, in the planning department for the local authority, so completely different.
That's quite swift.
It is. And I just started dabbling, fell in love with it, and work started picking up for me. And I eventually went down to 4 days a week in my corporate job, and 6 months later was able to go down to 3 days a week and got to the point where I was earning more from voiceover than I was in my corporate job. And so it was mid-2020, so just during the pandemic, I decided to take the plunge and handed in my notice and went full-time voiceover and have never looked back. The best decision I've ever made.
That's so cool.
It's as you guys probably know, it feels like a dream job sometimes. It's you just, you know, get to play about and...
It's pretty mad, isn't
it? I feel like you've achieved a lot in quite a short space of time there. Well done.
Yeah, well, can I just say, chime in, because Scott, you don't quite know this, but so... Because my dates of getting into voiceover are very similar to yours. And I remember it must have been around about late 2018 or early 2019, and from there, you know, like the Facebook group British Voiceovers, and there's a couple of others. And if you go on there, and if you certainly when you're learning, you hit the search function, you try and sort of find out answers to questions. And your name was popping up quite a lot. I remember seeing it. And it's just...
I've got too many questions.
No, but I just find it good because obviously people come and go, names come and go, but yours is always a constant. And I've said to Jen before, like, I know quite a few other VOs who all know you, but you and I have never got to know each other. And yet what you didn't know was that really from my early days, your name always stood out. And I was like, it was just nice to see that someone on the same sort of path as me has, you know, managed to make it work and stuck it out and obviously doing incredibly well. And I'm just surprised it's taken this long for us actually to have a conversation. But I'm glad that we finally do.
It's like that with so many people, isn't it? You go to, you know, the conferences and awards things and things like that, and you finally meet people that you've kind of either spoken to for years or that you kind of known of each other, but you've never actually, your paths haven't crossed. Yeah. So it happens all the time in this industry. I think because, like we were saying before the show, we're just so isolated a lot of the time. Yeah. And it's great to, great to actually catch up with you and as I was going to say, in person. We're not quite there yet.
Have you got your One Voice tickets?
I have, yes. I have, yes.
You're doing the whole weekend or you're just doing the awards?
I'm going to do the whole thing. I'm kind of of the view, if I'm going to go and do it, then I'll do all of it. I normally book a few days before and after as well, just to sort of make it a whole week away thing. Because other than that, I don't really take too much downtime, and I really should. So it's kind of like an opportunity just for me to take some forced downtime, yeah. I guess.
What about Get Your Game On? Have you been before, or are you planning on going to the one?
I haven't, no. So to be honest, and this is maybe it's a bit controversial, but I'm not a huge fan of kind of workshops and all that sort of interactive stuff. You know, I love, for example, the One Voice stuff, just going and sitting in on panels and discussions and things like that. But I'm not a huge fan of group workshops and stuff like that.
Oh, that's fascinating, because I am the opposite of that. So it's nice to meet people who are so different.
A lot of people are, and I always feel a bit weird because, you know, they love jumping into these things. Yeah. And I guess I'm, and it's, you know, when you're an actor, it's kind of funny to say, oh, I'm probably more of an introvert, but actually,
I think there are a lot of voice actors and actors actually who would call themselves that though.
Yeah, I think there are. Mm. And when you find more of them and talk about this sort of thing, you kind of realise, oh, it's not just me. Because, you know, you get on the stage or wherever and you want to put yourself out there and it's like, everyone, look at me. But then as soon as the spotlight goes off, it's like, God, no one look at me. I'm locking myself away for a week.
We do like this big performance or whatever, and as soon as the mic's off, it's like, please don't talk to me.
Exactly.
But it's a bit like, it's in a similar vein, you are absolutely right. It's like comedians. There's a long-standing myth that comedians have all this humour bottled up, but you meet them in real life and they're just not quite the same, you know.
Do you know what, one of my heroes comedic wise is David Mitchell. I just think he's absolutely brilliant, but he's another example of you know, someone who is incredibly funny and loves performing, but at heart is an absolute introvert. You know, when the camera's not on, he doesn't want anyone to notice him at all and just wants to sort of hide away. And it's quite reassuring to feel, to sort of hear that other people go through that as well.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot to be said for, again, going back to the isolation thing. And I found this fascinating. When you listen to, like, we all have, through this career, there are ups and downs. You know, if there's a little bit of a quiet patch, whatever it may be, when you hear other people go through similar things at certain times, it's that relatability. It's like, oh God, right, it's not just me.
Oh, it's huge. It's huge. And especially things like imposter syndrome that we all as actors suffer with from time to time. It's so reassuring to hear that not only other voice actors and even those who are consistently winning awards and talking at events and things like that, who still go through those feelings, and even some huge Hollywood names in terms of on-screen actors who are quite vocal about imposter syndrome. I watched something fairly recently with Mike Myers, and he was just talking about the fact that every time he does a film, he's just absolutely terrified, thinking, right, that's it, my number's up, I'm going to get found out that I can't act.
It's unimaginable, gets cast people in like
something.
That.
He's thinking, like, why have they chosen me? What on earth is going on? I'm going to be found out. And it's really good to hear that everyone sort of goes, or most people anyway, I think, go through those sort of feelings. And like you said, just talking to people and actually realising, because we are so isolated, we don't get to have those day-to-day conversations as much as, you know, people in other careers.
Yeah.
So,
what I find funny about it as well is that we never learn, because when like for example, whenever there's a quiet patch, we're like, well, fun while it lasted, and then as always, it goes back to normal, and it's like this repeat, rinse and repeat. And it's like, you've been so many times.
It's really hard. Like even though rationally, you know, it probably will improve, you don't feel like it at the time.
It's just part of the stress of being a business owner, I guess, isn't it? It's feeling that you're unemployed until your next job comes through. And, you know, if you're not working for a few days, you're thinking, well...
You literally felt a bit panicky when you said that, Scott.
Sorry.
It's like once a week, the neighbours will see you heading off to the job centre, like, off to the job centre again, Michael? Yep. And then you get an email, you booked a job, like, oh, I'll just go home.
Turn around and come home again.
So Michael and I, last week, we spoke about kind of how we plan to level up. And obviously, I mean, I'm a huge fan of your work without fangirling. But like, so what do you do to, you know, be great? Like, how do you keep pushing yourself to get better? Like, what's your process? How have you developed these different characters and into this these areas of voiceover?
Well, it's a good question because, like I said, I don't... This will be a bit of a controversial statement, but, you know, when you start out in voiceover, everyone says the same thing, don't they? You need to get a coach. You need to get professional training. And I've just never done that. And I, like I said before, I'm not a huge fan of group training or interactive workshops and stuff like that. But I like to think that I have a good idea of my own strengths and weaknesses. And I am very self-critical, which I think is a very good skill in itself to have and to develop. And so, you know, over long periods of time, I can look back and see improvements in the areas that I've been focusing on. But like I said, I feel like I'm a bit of a jack of all, master of none. And so working in lots of different areas, I think really helps me to pull elements from different parts and inject them into other genres. So, you know, I do a lot of character and animation work and video games and stuff like that. But actually, that's really helpful when it comes to, for example, some commercial work that calls for big characters or, you know, animation style commercials or whatever it might be. Or e-learning work, for example. Sometimes e-learning work is done with a character voice or an over-the-top performance. And so merging different genres and working across lots of different styles and then pulling aspects that I like from one to another or styles that I might be stronger in. So playing to my strengths and mixing and merging elements is kind of how I like to develop my own skills. So experimenting with new ideas and, you know, a lot of the time it just won't work. And there's a lot of trial and error to this approach, but quite often something awesome will come out and you've developed a new style or a new voice that you didn't know you had in you, and you can give casting directors something that's definitely going to stand out from other auditions. And I think also what I find really useful is, you know, people say you need to be really selective about which jobs you're auditioning for, and I absolutely agree with that. But at the same time, I don't like to look at a job and say, actually, that's not me, and then just ignore it. And there's a little anecdote that I'll give you. So there was a job that I was asked to audition for years ago now, and it was for like an old man voice. They were looking for something 70 plus to promote this festival. And just to give it a go, I tried doing this voice. And it sounded like an old man, whatever it sounded like. I don't really remember. But after doing that audition, which I booked, by the way, I was like, wow, okay, I've done an old man kind of voice. I kind of thought, well, it sounds a little bit like David Attenborough. So I started trying to see if I could work that voice into a David Attenborough style, which I then did. And now, I've been booked as an Attenborough for hundreds of jobs. I did a reality series with the Discovery Channel the year before last, all with this kind of Attenborough style. I've worked for, you know, big gaming companies just with this Attenborough style voice, which I would have never even discovered that I had I not just taken a chance and tried something that was completely outside my comfort zone. And then I developed that Attenborough voice and tried to play around with that and to, then develop that into like an old sort of wizardy voice. And now, honestly, 30% of my work is as an old man wizard doing video games or eccentric kind of over-the-top fantasy characters. And it's all developed from this one voice that I found that I had just by pushing myself to try something that was outside of my comfort zone. So that's how I feel like I level up. I just don't like to limit myself in terms of giving stuff a go. And then if there's a little spark in there, a little inkling that I think could be developed further, then I just love playing around with that and, being free just to experiment. Yeah.
But I totally know what you mean. It's very cool.
I had a listen to your reel before, Michael, and there was a spot on there. I think it's a motorbike safety one.
Yeah.
And that one really stood out to me as being like really good just because it is so natural, which is, I think, such a strong area for you. I think your voice just lends itself so well to that natural sound. But, and the same with you as well, John. I think it's that northern thing that you guys have going on. You just sound so trustworthy and genuine. Whereas I run away at the first sign of anyone saying, we want a conversational read or anything like that. I can't do it. I hate doing it. And it's one of those things, and I've been in similar situations to you where you're in a session and you've been hired on an audition that was done one way, and you always have to stay adaptable. And then the dreaded word comes up, no, we want you to sound really conversational, like you're talking to your mate. And of course, the script's not written in any way that you would ever talk to a friend. You know, the world of e-commerce is changing and data security is at the forefront of our
game. Shoehorn that fucker in.
Conversational about the way it's written at all.
Can you imagine if we actually had conversations like some of the scripts we get? It Can you?
Well, that's why I hate the word, and I genuinely don't think clients want conversational reads 90% of the time they state it, because when we are conversational, we mumble, we rush our words, we add filler words, we you know, all that kind of mumbly stuff. And there's no way you'd buy anything with someone talking like this. And I think where they get confused is they just want a more natural read. So it's not that buy now the super product deluxe. You know, it's just a more natural read.
The one that gets me is the funeral ads. Like, you like these people like, hello, Julie. Hello, David.
Oh, God,
how are you?
Oh,
I'm fine, Julie. I was just at the post office and I saw Deborah and she told me all about her. Oh, piss off, Dave. No one talks
like
that. Like
a genuine ad then.
Do you know what I mean? It's like,
were you confused, Scott? What happened?
There's an ad break in the middle of the podcast.
Sorry, we forgot to mention that. But you're so right, Mikey.
So contrived. It's that's what they're paid to do.
But the trouble is, when you're on a session then, and you get the director saying to you, you know, we want that more conversational. As soon as that pressure starts coming on, that's when I just fall to pieces when they're saying no, because you're tense, you're worried about what they're thinking. You're like, oh God, how can I make this more conversational? And the more you worry about it, the less natural and conversation it's going to be, because you're worrying more. And then
that is a style that you do need to fake, you know, being relaxed, don't you?
Which is why I just stay away from it. I really don't like it.
That is so interesting. I mean, that's most of what I book, I'd say, at the moment, is like conversational. But I think you're right. I think the Northern does help sometimes with that, or people's perceptions of what, you know, friendly and trustworthy is. Just going to change the subject slightly, thinking about the kind of conversational stuff. Just something I've been thinking about was whether it was worth doing a demo for conversational, because I know I've heard other people do it and I do book quite a bit of it. Like, I don't know, what do you guys reckon? Do you reckon it's worth doing something for a particular style, like a whole demo on that?
Well, like just a natural read?
Yeah, well, you know, like some people have like conversational demo or whatever, so to kind of showcase different styles in that style of voice.
I would say probably not. And the reason I would say that is because one of my pet peeves when I listen to reels is hearing a spot and then hearing another spot straight after that's a really similar style or isn't showing any range. And so if you've got a reel that's all conversational stuff, it's going to feel very samey, and I think people are going to sort of lose interest after the first
True. Like, if you've got one clip, maybe it's enough.
Yeah, I feel like it. And, you know, if it's a popular thing for you and you're booking a lot, maybe put it at the start of your standard commercial reel, so it's the first thing people hear and, you know, oh, wow, she's fantastic at the conversational stuff, and then straight from that jump into something completely different. So it's like, oh, she's great at that. Wow, she does this as well. Whoa, she does this as well. So it keeps them on their toes. You're going to get people listening longer. That's just my view anyway.
I tend to agree with you. I do like being able to show a bit of versatility on demos, and I get really bored when you listen to someone else and you're like, well, yeah. You can do that. You're really good. What else?
It's like Scott said before, but that one I've got in mind, the Think Bike. Now, I would do a reel of clips all just like that because I really enjoy doing that, but it shows no range. Like, you need to have a bit of diversity in there and show that you could do, even if it doesn't have to be like worlds different, but at least show something that maybe is a little bit more, you know, typical radio style and just play about with it. But I think you said there, Scott, about putting it first. I think that's one thing I always think about, like, what, you know, obviously, I mean, I don't do my own demos, I get them done, but yeah, it's the order of them, because sometimes I get it back and go, oh, that sounds really good though, that should be earlier on, because people don't really listen to a reel from start to finish, do they, do you reckon? Or do they, like, is there a typical number that people tend to stick around for and then it drops off?
Yeah, I mean, people always say that, you know, casting directors will listen to the first 15 seconds or 20 seconds of a reel before deciding yes or no, and they might come back. If it goes into the yes pile, then they might give it a deeper listen later on. But generally, I think it's, you know, 10, 15 seconds is about the standard that they say that you're, and I think it depends on, you know, if that's a huge casting and they've got 100 reels to listen to, then yeah, they're going to be very quickly sifting through them. If you've been specifically requested, you know, if you've worked with them before, or it's a client that you have spoken to a little bit, or they've approached you directly based on other stuff you've done, then I think obviously they're going to listen to a lot more of it because you are already sort of further in that sort of running process, I guess.
I find it a bit depressing that people only, I completely understand, but a little bit depressing when people say, like, they listen to the first 10 seconds or something.
I know. Like, do you know how much work went into the other 50 seconds?
Oh, yeah. Like, I I redid my video game. No, well, didn't redo it. It's my first one. My video game demo last year, and I cannot. Months went into that. Like everything went into it, and I can't tell you how much I've overthought about it and like tinkered with it, and maybe improved it, maybe not. But oh yeah, the idea is just like 10 seconds. Yeah. So I've been releasing like individual clips because people have such short attention spans. So you get like a 10-15 second clip, and that's it.
Yeah.
Of one style.
Which is why when I produce gaming reels, I always try to just sort of keep everything as fast-paced and engaging and varied as possible, just so you're constantly keeping that. Just, you know, you give them 10 seconds, and just when they're starting to switch off, you know, bang, you hit them with something that's really impactful. There's loads going on, but it's a complete different style. So you've taken them like a sharp angle, and then do that again 5 seconds later.
I do love that, listening to it. But then I'd had some feedback from somebody or when I was doing my research about how some casting directors in gaming are wanting longer pieces to kind of hear a bit more of that character in different kind of situations or different emotions and a bit more of a journey. But that's kind of contradictory to other feedback you get.
It's difficult because, like you said, so many people have different opinions, and even casting directors and producers and game studios will all have differing opinions. Some will say, I only want my gaming reel to be 60 seconds because they know that the commercial reel only needs to be 60 seconds and the corporate reel should be 60 seconds. But actually, 60 seconds in a gaming reel is nowhere near, if you've got a large range of character voices, it's nowhere near enough time, because you're not just delivering a fact or promoting a service or conveying a single emotional style. There's so much world building that goes into creating a believable character or a scenario, and you've got to set up the scene or that scenario with enough context that the listener can become emotionally invested in what you're doing to make that world or that character believable. You can't just do an emotional spot that's 5 seconds long, because there's no time for that emotion to come through, you know.
They're not going
to
care,
exactly.
Are they?
So you kind of have to show how you can build that up, or, you know, if you're showing anger, you don't just want to start a spot by shouting straight away. You want to show how you can go from a normal level or a conversational level and build that emotion and take the listener on that journey through those emotions rather than just hitting them with it. So personally, I feel like a gaming reel needs to be longer than 60 seconds. I normally aim for about 2 minutes or a minute and a half to 2 minutes, sometimes a bit longer than that. Yeah. As long as it's showing range, and as long as nothing's sounding samey, and as long as you're showing something new every time, then I think, you know, go on for as long as you want. If they want to stop listening at some point, that's great. As long as you're putting your best work at the front. That's my view anyway, but like I said, everyone will have a different take on that and a different view.
Yeah.
Do you think...
And I think that... Sorry, Mike, you go.
No,
I was just going to say, and I think that can be a problem, because you're like, certainly me, but I think I speak for a lot of voice actors, and we are constantly trying to please different people and put ourselves in the best position to get hired by different casting directors. And you're right, it's so subjective. So it is a challenge.
I get a lot of people that will approach me and say, hey, I've never done any character work or video game work. I want to work in that sector. Can I work with you to create a demo reel? And I'll say, well, what have you done before? Have you worked in animation before? Have you done video games before? What can you show me that you have done already? And they'll say, no, I've never done any of that before. I want to get into that, but I've never done that before. And then at that point, I will have to say to them that I don't think you're quite ready to start working on a gaming or animation reel if you've not done any work at all in the area, because it's such a process to try and work with someone and when they've not done any form of character acting before, to say, well, what voices can you do? What ages can you play? What accents can you do? What are your acting, you know, and we're not just talking about commercial acting or anything like that, but, you know, really intense, emotional and deep acting abilities. Like, you know, what are they like? And to then work with someone from scratch to try and pull all of that out of them, I mean, that's when they need to start working with an acting coach and, you know, all that sort of stuff first.
So would that be your advice then to those people? Would you say, like, okay, go away and do a bit of acting coaching?
I don't want to sound contradictory, because I don't really enjoy those workshops and things like that, but those would be a great opportunity to start exploring what different voices you can do, what ages you can play, you know, what sort of characterizations can you add into different voices to create completely new characters. And then when you have a strong list of different, and I think the most important thing, believable sounding characters, because when you listen to this sort of stuff, there's a very fine line between a believable character that genuinely sounds like they're part of whatever this world you're creating is, and someone just doing a silly voice. And as soon as you cross over that line into, oh, actually, that's someone doing a voice, that suspension of disbelief is broken, and you can't get that back. And at that moment, the whole world that you've built up around this character within this spot is broken. You know, it doesn't just break the character, it breaks that whole world that you've created.
Yeah. Do you think so? With that in mind, then, you would definitely say that in order to explore the gaming world, having a repertoire of voices is pretty much essential.
Personally, with my producer's hat on, yes, because you know I could work with someone and see what voices we can do, and but then you start turning more into a coach, then, which I'm not by any means a coach, and then it becomes very, very time consuming on my end, eating into the session time, but also, you know, it's going to take hours to coach someone, to train them on all of these individual characters and to handhold them through that entire process, which is really what they should come to a showreel production session with already. So yeah, absolutely. I think getting your teeth stuck into some animation work or gaming work at a lower level, perhaps, if you've not done any before, working with a coach, workshop, stuff like that, but really developing a strong repertoire of voices or characters who you can confidently and believably play in a whole range of emotions is so key before you start thinking about making a character-based reel, I think.
Yeah, I feel like you have definitely inspired me to play a bit more. And I think you have to have confidence to just sound like an idiot. And I think you can do that in your own home, can't you? And just like play around with some sounds, like what sounds can I make? And like play around with those character voices as well. And kind of, yeah, try and breathe a bit more life into them as well, and kind of work out what my range is. And I think I feel like there's a lot of untapped stuff there that I haven't kind of let come out yet, so it's going to be interesting to see.
And do you know what, one of the biggest things for me was when I upgraded my studio. So the second studio that I had was just a spare room. It wasn't soundproofed at all, but you know, I treated it, but it wasn't soundproof by any means. The studio that I'm in now was a full garage conversion, so it was soundproofed by design from the very beginning of the build. And the moment that I moved into this room, knowing that it's, you know, there's an airlock system, into the two 60-minute solid core fire doors on there, triple glazed window, it's completely soundproof. And so the moment that I moved into this studio, knowing that no one else, because you know, even when your family's walking around the house, you don't want to be heard doing something that sounds ridiculous or sounds silly.
No.
And when you're trying to create these new characters, like I said before, 90% of what comes out is going to sound ridiculous.
Yeah.
And you can't help it, but and you don't want to, but you'd feel embarrassed if other people heard you doing these silly things, because some of them will sound terrible. But that 10% that you can find if you keep pushing can be golden when you start developing it. And so what I found was the moment that I moved into this studio, knowing that it's completely soundproof, I was able just to completely let go and just try some crazy things with my voice, knowing that it's a bit like when you're driving down the motorway, you can sing at the top of your voice because you know no one in the world can hear you.
Great.
And you might find, oh, actually, I hit that note, or I was able to sing along quite well with that one, or whatever it might be. But it's because you're in a safe space, you know no one else can hear you, and that's one of the safe places you feel that you can try these things.
Yeah,
and it's the same with character voices. If you know that no one else in the world can hear you, you'll be amazed at how much further you're willing to push yourself.
Yeah, 100% agree. And I try them out now when I'm reading to my kids like bedtime stories. And some go down well and some do not. And I've been asked to stop on a number of occasions. Still working on the Australian accent. It's not gone down well. I was just going to wrap up and say thank you very much. And I'd just love to hear what's next for Scott.
What's next for me? Oh, well.
Yeah. Have you got any thoughts?
Is the podcast coming back?
Oh, well, my podcast, maybe.
Yeah.
It's one of those.
Is it voiceover talks?
Voiceover talks, yeah. It's one of those things that, again, is on my to-do list, and I really enjoy doing it. And
you're a busy guy. It's okay.
Yeah, it's like everything at the moment. It's like, oh, I must pick that up again. I've got my all my guitars hanging on the wall, and I keep saying, I must get back into my music again. And it just, years go by, and you think, oh, yeah, I was going to get back into that. And it didn't happen. But yeah, I think moving forward, what I normally do, and I normally set myself goals at the beginning of each year, you know, X amount of TV commercials, or make X amount of money in this year, whatever it might be. And I feel like now, I feel like, you know, when you, like, your voiceover is so much fun, and when you start out, it's a hobby, and it still is a hobby. It's something that we're able to do for fun, but we've all been lucky enough to be able to turn that into a business. But as with any hobby, as soon as you monetize it, it does become a business. And so you're having to focus on marketing and promotion and admin and taxes and training and all that sort of stuff that comes with it. And so I feel like that sort of hobby element to it has been taken away from me. You know, the reason that you sort of fall in love with it in the first place gets lost among that work and business side of it.
Yeah, such a good point.
While it is still so much fun and doesn't really feel like work, it's no longer a hobby. And so I kind of feel like I'm missing something in that part of my life, something that I purely do for the joy of doing it rather than just to monetize it or to turn it into a business, you know? And so I think I want to start getting into more on-screen acting and stage acting and stuff like that. I did some supporting artist work on a miniseries for ITV just before the pandemic that was filming down here in Cornwall. And it was just so much fun being on set, meeting so many people. There's such good camaraderie among everyone and just being out and about as opposed to stuck inside my booth all day. I guess my goal.
Well, that's why I love going to acting. That's why I love going to acting class. I'm there all day, once a week, and I just love it for exactly that reason. Just being around like-minded people, and just, you know, enjoying.
Exactly, and I guess that's what my goal is, to start seeking out more opportunities that are just for me rather than just a financial goal or a business goal. I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, you made a good point. Yeah. Actually, just got, I know we have to, because you've got a session coming up very shortly, haven't you? So I'll keep it brief, but. Just something you said there about every year, you know, we do set our... Well, because you've got to set targets. You've got to be like, I want to do this, this and this. But life has its ways of throwing curveballs. Mm. And what I've then started to do now is, whilst I still have those objectives, now my attitude is just get up and just do your best today. And that's it. Because if something happens tomorrow that's out of your control and it skews your targets, it doesn't mean you're failing. It's just you'd have to navigate through murky waters. So just focus on doing the best you can today. And what I found is... in some of those moments that I am finding I'm enjoying things a bit more because I'm not putting too much pressure on myself. Do you know what I mean?
That's a huge thing, is the pressure that we put on ourselves. And so, taking that off in any way that you can, I think. And when we work in this industry, you know, your mind has to be so focused on what you're doing and to bring a script to life. And so if you've got those stresses or worries or whatever going on in the back of your mind, it's so hard to focus on that. So I think you're absolutely right, Michael. If you can in any way sort of alleviate those pressures on yourself and just take it a day at a time, I think the work that you do on that day is going to be so much more impactful for you.
All right, I think that's a good way to wrap it up. Thanks so much for taking the time to chat to us.
I think that, looking for you to like find more joy, I think is a fantastic objective to have. And I think it'll speak to a lot of people to make sure you're finding the joy in every day, or at least not every day, but just trying to find some.
A little bit more, just a day a week, a day a month.
Yeah.
Nice at the moment. Come on, I'm not asking for much universe, please.
A little bit of joy.
No, I don't want to sound ungrateful, because I'm very grateful that I get to do this day in and day out.
Thank you so much, Scott. It's been so fantastic talking to you.
Oh, no problem. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, guys. I've absolutely loved this, and I've loved listening to the podcast since you guys launched it. I think you've got a really nice format going on, and seeing the feedback that people are sending to you as well must be really nice for you guys.
It's amazing. We're bowled over.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just overwhelmingly grateful. It's been fantastic.
Well, it's been a pleasure being on. So thank you guys so much for having me.
Thank you, Scott. We'll see you soon.
Honestly, thanks a lot, pal. Look forward to seeing you at One Voice.
Yeah,
a few weeks' time. See you there.
Bye.
Nice one. Take care, folks. See you on the next one.